Alan Kring Productions, in association with Emergent Life Studio, presents the Illinois State Collegiate Compendium, Academic Lectures in Business and Economics. This is Business Finance, FIL 240, Section 4, for Spring Semester 2020. Lecture 11, delivered on February 19th.
Tonight, present value and future value. To begin the night, first things first, have a quick look at the markets, see how they're doing. Kill some lights here so you can see. Now, just to start this off, is this a good day or a bad day on the street? Yeah, it actually is a pretty good day. It's not spectacular, but it's a decent day. Any day that's up when you're long stocks is a good day. And this was broad-based, of course. As you can see, the strongest rally was in the NASDAQ, and then the S&P 500 and the Dow also did some nice things, too. So we've got a decent day. If we look over here, gold really didn't do anything, so there's not much to say there. But the 10-year bond actually did well, too. So we've got very broad base. Money is flowing into both equities and debt securities, which tells you that investors are in a very bullish mood. And if you go back here to the beginning, we can say, looking at the S&P 500 chart, you can see that it was actually not a spectacular day. It just kind of rose nicely, and then it kind of leveled off. And then you saw there at the end, the bears kind of grabbed a hold. You see that volume surge going into the end of the day. And as you can see, that volume surge was associated with a drop, which indicates that there were some bears in there doing some profit taking. Nothing spectacular. They weren't really in a hugely bearish mood. They just said, well, you know, some of these S&P stocks are a little overvalued, so let's just sell them off, just clean up the portfolio a little bit for the end of the day. So we don't know where we are going into tomorrow. It doesn't seem to be saying much to us one way or the other. The question then goes, well, what do we do as individual investors with our portfolios? And as I had promised, I was going to show you how to execute some orders, just the real world of doing it. And I'll do a couple here just to give you the feel of how this stuff works. And I will take my own account, and I'm going to dump this miserable thing, which has lost me money. And as you can see, I'm long 50 shares. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to dump those 50 shares like a hot potato, trade on the stocks and ETFs. Now my going to sell, and my quantity is I'm going to end my pain on this, on JCPenney. And I'm not going to make a limit. Just sell it for whatever the hell you can get for it. So I'm going to say this is a market order. And the time and force, well, I'm just going to make it for the day. It'll execute right away, obviously, because I'm just giving it a market order. So I don't need to worry about, as you can see, you've got all these different options. Market on close, well, not on this one. Okay, JCPenney is pretty sad. And so I'm going to say goodbye to this. You know, kiss my ass, goodbye. And it's going to give you a chance to have a look at this. And I'm going to make a whopping $35. That'll go into cash. Yeah, it's good times tonight. Everyone, Denny's is on me tonight. No, it's not. I can't afford all of you hungry souls. Okay, so what I'll do now is I'm going to place the hours. Now, place the order. Now, we're after hours. So I actually don't know whether it will execute immediately or if we'll wait until the next trading day to execute. Place the order. Was received. Your order number. It's an open. Yeah, it's open. It's not. It's going to sit there probably until tomorrow to execute. Now, the next thing that I'm going to do is I'm going to actually do a buy order, and I'm going to show you one of these. Now, I'm going to trade on stocks and ETFs. Well, the first thing I'm going to do is I'm going to say, what do I have in cash that I can use? Because I sure as hell don't want to use margin. In other words, I don't want to borrow money from TD Ameritrade to do this. So let's have a look at what I have in cash. I have $107.59. Okay, well, that's enough for some penny stock. And I've got one in mind. I had it for a while. I dumped it too early. And then, it, of course, once I had dumped it, it went up. So I'm going to go trade stocks and ETFs. And I'm going to have a look here. Buy. And the first thing I'm going to do is I'm going to type in the trading symbol. This company is called Eros. Eros is not what it sounds like, erotic, oh yeah. No, it's a Bollywood production company. It has had a high of above 12, and then it had some internal management problems. The big dog in the company handed it off to his sons, who very swiftly screwed the pooch and drove the stock price down to a miserable low. I think it was below a buck at one point. And now it's back up to $3 a share. So let's have a look at see what this thing looks like. Right now it's at $2.96 a share. Okay, I've got $107. Why don't you just leave it in that cash, fat boy? Why don't, sir, why don't I just have that money in my cash account?
Because you can make
more money. Yes, I'm making almost nothing in the cash. It'll sweep at night. A sweep is when the money that you have in an account overnight is swept into this vast global liquidity pool, and you make a little tiny bit of money, and then it's swept back into your account at the beginning of the day the next day. And that's not my thing. I want to try to make some money. So let's say that, okay, it's at $2.96. That's close to $3, and so I could probably afford 25 shares of Eros. Now I'm going to put a limit on this one. Right now it's at 296. The ask is 296. In other words, I'm going to have to buy it at 296, but it might be pop before I can get that price for it. So I'm going to say limit it at $3 a share. And that says, okay, that's $75 is the worst that'll happen to you. Now, it used to be they also included a commission, but most of the houses are no longer charging commission on just simple buy and sell equity orders. So in force for the day, and again, this is overnight, so it'll probably be hanging until first light tomorrow, and then it'll execute. But here is a classic limit order. Now, you can see this limit order is a buy. So I can say, buy it at the market. No, that thing could pop awful on me. Just my luck that it would probably go to $5 a share and then I'd be screwed on it. And I can do the stop first, trailing stops in percent. I'm not going to do any of those. Those are different kinds of ways that you can don't go any further than things, okay? These are don't go further than this amount or this percentage or this dollar value on the trail. And I'll explain those later in the course. But right now, I'm going to look at this one last time, and I'm going to review the orders, and they're going to say, all right, this is going to cost you no more than $75. If I get it, it'll probably cost me a little less if they can get it at the bid overnight. And I'm going to say, okay, do it. And as you can see, they're both sitting open now. They'll execute at the beginning of the day tomorrow. So I've got a dump. I've got a I'm selling off a long position. I'm clearing a long, and then I'm taking another long position. Now you notice the one that I'm selling, I'm just selling it whatever. It's a market order. Whatever you can get for it. 50 cents, whatever. Just get it, get me out of that damn thing. And then the other one is a limit order because I'm buying in and I don't want to have that thing suddenly pop on me. If that thing goes too high, I don't want to buy it. I can't afford it. And I don't want to, and I've already missed an opportunity. So in this case, well, I'm going to have a look here just one last time. And I'm going to say, well, okay, I'm fine. I'm happy. Yeah. Oh, God, I'm a stupid man. Okay, so anyway, it just gives you a little taste of buying and selling. It's not some huge thing, and once you do it a few times, it's just like, well, this is just something you do like fixing a quick meal. That's a problem, though, because I didn't show you that I had actually done some research. My research on JCPenney simply is, this sucks. However, I did do some research on, I've been following and tracking Eros, and I'm going to show you just a quick dirty screen on that. I'll show you some hotter screens later, but, and I'm going to put in Eros so you can see some of the rationale, what I was looking at. Really? Let's try that again. E-R-O-S. Eros. Yeah. Now notice that that price that you're seeing there, that is not what I paid. Don't believe that big, bold price. That's not what you're going to pay for it. You're going to buy at the bid. And as you can see, son of a bitch. I bought it at more. Oh, this is delayed quotes. This is yeehaw. Okay. So now in a case like this, notice this company is losing money, so it doesn't even have a P.E. ratio. The beta is a lie because it's just not a company where you've got enough information to calculate the actual risk of it. But as you can see, we had this pop. Did you see that happen today right there? Someone got interested in this, and then it began to rise through the day, and then some bears came in and said, you're stupid, sell. But then at the end, look at that. There was a slide upward. Now, that worries me a little bit because I put a limit at $3, and I might not catch my limit. If it surges tomorrow morning, I should have probably put this in at maybe 305 on the limit, because you see that there's this little pop there at the end of the day. That might continue tomorrow, and might not be able to execute my order at $3, and I lose it because it's a good-for-the-day order, and I won't have a chance for it to go back down. So we'll see whether, and if you look here, right here, 295. So the bid on that's probably somewhere around 302. And I'm hoping that that thing doesn't achieve that little quick high that it had near the end of the day today, because if it does, my order will not execute if the ask is above that above $3. This is kind of the stuff that you do. If you're interested in this, well, talk to me. We'll sit down and I'll get you started on the road to poverty with my advice. But at the same time, notice something else. If I look at the year to date, do you see how I'm looking at this high right here that was above $4 a share, and I'm betting that it's going to test that high within a month or two. So if it goes there, $3 goes to $4, I've made $1 divided by $3, I've made a 33% return on a couple of months of investment. If it doesn't, well, I've lost $75 or so, and that company can kiss my ass. But this is what we do in the investment side. And if you're interested in it, well, you can do this too for your own self, or you can do it as a living down the road if you major in finance. Anyway, enough of that nonsense for today. I just wanted you to see a little bit about how you actually do this in practice. There's nothing scary, nothing intimidating. Just don't be stupid and put in market orders too often, especially if you don't want a surprise, especially on the buy side. But on the sell side, if you're dumping something, you just say whatever you can get for it. Usually, not always, but usually. Sometimes you put a limit order on the downside. Because what you don't want with some stocks is for it to drop too fast, knowing that it might come back up. If it drops too fast, then you're going to sell at a nasty low price. Whereas if you put a limit on it, you're probably not going, it won't execute if it drops too fast. Especially if it's going to recover, you don't want to sell it at a terribly low price. That can happen sometimes. Now, time value of money, present value and future value. As I said last time, money in the now is worth more in the future, but money in the future is worth less now. I could, let me try to do it this way. Sir, I can give you $100 now, or I can give you $100. That's right. I can give you $100 now, or $100 in a year. Which do you prefer? Yeah, of course. Now is preferred to the future. So in other words, that $100 a year from now isn't worth $100 to you right now. It's worth something less than that. This is the basis of how we do analysis of cash. If you say, well, there is $200 going to come into this company in a year, well, that's not the same as $200 now. We discount. Finding present values is called discounting. Finding future values is called compounding. I am almost sure that I will have this on a quiz or a test. That very basic concept. By the way, I'm having a surprise quiz on Monday. Okay? So please act surprised. It will be on the special topics. There was no homework for that. That was an error in the schedule. There's no homework with the special topics. There's just a 10-question quiz, and that'll be on Monday. And please don't send me a message, my father died. Well, didn't your father die 2 weeks ago? Don't do that. Just be here, or I'll eat your head. Okay, now, basic formula. And this is just a calculator thing. The first one is that the future value is the present amount times 1 plus the interest rate periodic to the number of periods. Now, that's not always just the annual. This periodic interest rate is the annual percentage rate divided by the number of compoundings per year. And this is the number of years times the number of compoundings per year. So if I said it is compounded annually, the number of compoundings would be 1. Nothing about that. Annual, 1. If I were to say semi-annual, madam, 2. If I were to say quarterly, go ahead, impress me, 4. If I were to say monthly, 12. Now, there are some semis and bis in there, too. So this one was one. It's been a couple of years ago. I did one on a test where I did weekly. And I had some student come up during the test, and she said, how many weeks are in a year? And I wanted to lie to her just so she'd get it wrong. But you're going to learn tonight, by the way, how to calculate payments on a loan. It's one of the most useful things I teach in this course on car loan, home loan. And at one point, the thing about these formulas, let me give you a heads up. With finance formulas, if you make a mistake or if you put a number in that's not right, your answer will be complete nonsense. It's a good warning. I mean, it's not proving that something is wrong, but if you get something that's way out of whack, then you kind of know something happened. Now, I was teaching at another university here in town, an elite private school that is a legend in its own mind. The only people who are impressed by the degrees there are the people who have degrees there. But I did one for finding a car payment on a 5-year car loan and find your monthly payments. And it was on the board, and I asked someone in the class, okay, what did you get for a payment? And she said, my payment comes out to be $10,079. I said, does that make sense, a car payment that high? And she said, I don't know. My dad pays my car payments. Yep, I'm teaching at the wrong school. I'd rather teach here. Here you go. Okay, the number of compoundings per year. Now, this means that you'll have to do a little division if you're going to do some kind of calculation. So in other words, Madam, you don't know this, but you're actually, I'm a very wealthy man, and you are my daughter. And you're, and I've decided, I've finally, you know, faced up to my obligation. I said, okay, I'm going to give you $100,000. And being a responsible person, you decide, well, I'm going to put that in a savings account so that, let's say that you put $100,000 into an account paying, let's say, 3.8% annual. Now, by the way, almost always, I can't think of many exceptions to this, when you see an interest rate, it is an annualized interest rate. It is an annual. So you have to make your adjustments. Interest how much will you have? After, let's say, 20 years, if the interest is compounded quarterly. By the way, something I forgot, I got off track there. If it says semi, that is divided by 2. Okay, so if it's like a year, semi-annual would be twice a year. Now, if I said bi, like bi-weekly, that means it's every 2 weeks. So there would be 26 bi-weeks in a year. So know that difference between the semis. Sometimes you'll see a semi-annual, a semi-quarterly, a semi-weekly, or a bi-weekly, or a bi-monthly. Bi-monthlies are sometimes show up. Okay, so anyway, I want to clarify that. Okay, so what we would want to do here is we would say that we know the amount now, that we know the PV. So we would say the future value, the FV, is going to be the amount now, 100 grand, times 1 plus the annual rate, 0.038, over 4 to the 4 times 20. In other words, there are 80 periods in this 20 years that will occur as far as compounding goes. In other words, your interest will be calculated 4 times a year. So that'll be a total of 80 times over 20 years. Just do it this way, and you'll. Now, I do caution, though, on the calculator. First of all, you need a scientific calculator. Don't try to use a plain old cheapo calculator, like a business calculator, for these kinds of equations, because business calculators, if you're doing just straight arithmetic, they don't know the hierarchy of operations. They'll put a plus before a times. So you're going to need a scientific calculator. And the one that I'm going to pull up here, this TI-83, it is a scientific calculator, so we can do straight-up formula math. But it also has hellacious financial functions. And you will do, in this class, your work either on a TI-83 plus or I'll show you some mad Excel skills, too, along the way. Obviously, I need to do that. But do know that this calculator has, okay, really? Let's try that again. Apps. This is a whole swarm of finance functions. And they will do amazing things for you. Now, I understand that in your I may be wrong about this. In your accounting classes, they made you look in the back at tables to find. Okay, well, in this class, we have made it past the 19th century. So we don't use stupid tables. For one, they are limited in their accuracy. And for two, why would you look at tables anymore when you can do them on these financial calculators? Don't get me wrong, it's a nice historical artifact, and I'm into old things. Hell, I still use clay tablets for PowerPoints, but there's no reason to use tables when you've got these things. You see, what those tables do is they give you, for different interest rates and different years, this thing right here. So they're called factors, and you get tables across the number of the interest rates and down the number of years or periods. It's just madness to do it that way. What's difficult, though, is for some people to let go of that because we learned it with that. When I was a child, my mother and father ran a mortgage and loan company. Well, they were just the managers. They didn't own anything. But there was this ginormous book of these annuity factors for loans. Interest rates this way, years down that way. It was just, and I mean, I was just this miserable little fat boy. I didn't go outside because people would beat me up. So I just stayed inside and just memorized these tables. God, I had a weird childhood. But the point, though, is that we don't do this anymore. Okay, but for this one, we don't even use the fancy finance functions. For one like this, just push it into your full calculator straight up. You just say 100,000 times, and then you open your parentheses, which this keyboard can't understand. One plus, the one caution I'm going to give you here is 0.038 divided by 12, divided by 4, close the parentheses. Now, here's what I was talking about. Simple calculators and straight-up business calculators would do the plus 0.038 before they do the 4, which is, of course, wrong. But they don't know the hierarchy of operations. As a matter of fact, business calculators like the BA2, It has financial functions, no question about it, but if you're doing straight algebra formulas, it'll give you wrong answers because it doesn't do the arithmetic hierarchy. But anyway, now we're going to raise this to the... Now, the one thing you have to watch out for is if you're going to do a calculation, do it in parentheses as the exponent. Otherwise, the hierarchy is going to say, do the first thing and then go on to the times. So you have to trap the top. That would be 20 years times 4 compoundings per year to close it off, like that. And then there's your Uncle Bob. Something else I was going to say about that before I go on. I was thinking, but let me see. What was I? There was kind of a, oh, that's what I was going to say. Don't write down a number and then put it back in. Because that's where your rounding error will kill you, is if I did let me do 0.0384 and then write that number down and then key it in again. Don't. Do it as a straight calculation because those rounding errors, especially if there's any kind of an exponent involved, those rounding errors actually accumulate, surprise, surprise, exponentially. And so you can get an answer that is just wrong enough so that when you put it into your homework in the Cengage, it'll say, no, you're wrong. And you're going to say, wait a minute, I'm off by only 0.1% or $2. And why is that important? Well, if you're in the world of finance and you're off by a couple of dollars on every account, you've got a million accounts, suddenly they're going to dock your paycheck awful bad. And there it is. $213,061.93. The next thing is, does that answer make sense? Do a sanity check on yourself here. I mean, like I said, if you put something in wrong, it'll go way sideways on you. In this case, yeah, after 20 years, I'll probably have a little more than double my money. Okay, well, that's pretty good. Okay, that's fine. So we're in business there. Nothing wrong there. The question would be, is there a way that I could find how long it would take me to double my money? Well, yeah, there's a routine in Excel that can pull that little stunt off for you. Let me pull this up here and see if I can do this. I got burned this morning in a class because the Excel didn't have an applications pack, and I was trying to use functions that didn't actually weren't there. Let me try this. Equals number of periods, and then it wants the rate, which you would say is 3.8. I think they want it. Now, I might be wrong about this. I think they want it as just the percentage. Not sure about that. I'll find out really here in a second. Number of periods. I don't know. Payment. I don't know if it's going to be able to do this trick or not. The payment amount would be, what would they want for the payment here? This end period, it's a lot easier to do this, trust me, just straight up than it is on Excel for this one. Number of the payment would be 100,000. No, 200,000. No. Oh, shut up. Get off my back. Sick of it. Payments. There's no payment, that's right, comma, and then the present value is 100,000, and the future value is 200,000. Oh, and I did screw up something there. It's compounded quarterly, divided by 4. So I will get my answer in periods coming out of this. Close a parenthesis, pig face blank. So I'll try it one more time, and then I'll back off the Excel until I see what the application pack says to do for this thing. I'll see. But, well, let's just see. The present value? Yeah, it's not going to like that. I'm thinking that what I'm going to do is let's try it if I put in the negative in there. I'm not going to mess with this too long. I got other things. There it is. 73 periods. Okay. So how many periods would that be? 73 equals that divided by 4. So that'd be 18 years, approximately. As you can see, at 20 years, I had more than 200,000. Okay? So in other words, this is saying that it would take 18 years and change to double my money. Let me check one thing here. Yeah, you do put in actual decimal. In some places, especially in the TI, if you are using a finance application, you might want to write this down somewhere where you don't forget it. If you're using a finance application, you put interest rates in as the whole numbers, as the percentages. So in TI 83, I put in 3.8%. But if you're doing straight algebra, just math, formula, you always use the decimal. And you'll see that in action here in just a little while. But yeah, that's a number of periods function, okay? And if you want to say, well, exactly how much is that? Well, what I could do here, how many years is that actually? So I could actually say equals that that number minus the truncated amount of the number. Whoops. In other words, cut off the whole part. of it. And that'll give me the decimal piece of that year. And I would say, okay, equals that times 4. And you're saying, well, how boring is this? How? Yeah, it's about, in other words, about 18 years and a little more than one quarter would get me my doubling. And if you have never seen this before, I'll do it again a couple places. But I'm going to leave this Excel sheet up so I can show you some more Mat Excel skills here in a while. Have you ever noticed that a TI-83, the virtual, turns off when you don't use it for a while? Why? Saving battery? No, seriously, noobs. Why does that thing, it just pisses me off. Anyway, now I have to turn it back on. Well, at least it kept my stuff. Why would you turn off the calculator if it's virtual?
Yeah, you might drain your battery.
Anyway. Okay. Okay, now, let's turn this around a little bit. Turn it around and say, well, what happens if we know the amount in the future and we want to find out what it's worth now? Well, we can actually just turn this formula around, and I can say that the present value, I just divide both sides by the one is the future value over 1 plus r to the nth power, like that. I can just turn it around so I can find present values. Now, this is the formula for a lump sum of money, just a plop of money right there. I'm going to show you from your dark days in algebra. You might recall that the reciprocal of an exponent is the negative of it. So this is the same thing as saying the present value is a future value times 1 plus r to the 1 plus the periodic rate to the negative n. You'll see me use the negative instead of the divided by rather frequently. It's the main reason I do this is that when you're dividing, you're asking for trouble if you forget a parenthesis. In other words, you always, if you're going to do a division and there's multiple parts in the denominator, you have to remember to trap all of that in parentheses. By doing it this way, you're sort of forced to do it. You won't forget to do it. And you just use a negative of the power. So now, your dream home. In 5 years, you want to buy a double-wide trailer on the south side of Decatur. And I'm not talking about any trailer. This is double-wide because, you know, you're going to have your brother move in, and he's a double-wide guy, you know. And you're going to get that nice skirt around it so that the vermin don't crawl under there. And, you know, maybe get one of those nice little picket fences so you can stand all the beer cans to show people that you are a connoisseur of beer. You buy Schlitz Light and Schlitz Regular, okay. But you know that you want a down payment of $5,000 on it. So how much would that you have to put in the bank now to do that? You want $5,000 in, let's say, 6 years. How much would you have to put in have to invest right now in an account that pays, let's say, 4.6% compounded monthly to achieve this? So now you know the future value. So you would use And you need to find the present value. So in this case, what you would want to do is we would want to key in to find the present value. We would do 5 grand times 1 plus 0.046 over 12 to the 12 to the negative 12 times 6 years. Nothing really too complicated about it. I mean, and actually, it turned off again. Do you see that? Oh, okay. Anyway. And so what we're going to do here is we're going to just, I mean, actually, this TI could do this by the app functions in finance. But it's almost like, why even bother if it's something this straightforward? You do 5,000 times, open the parenthesis, 1 plus 0.046 divided by 12, close the parenthesis, and then y to the x. Now, I give you a caution here. Technically, in arithmetic, there is a difference between a minus and a negative. In some kinds of courses, when I taught math, I actually had to teach that difference in order for the calculators to do things right. And some calculators actually insist on you knowing that. Just for your background information, a minus is a binary operator. It operates between two things. A negative is a unary operator. It operates on one thing. And so when you say it's minus 12 degrees, well, that's okay to say it, but it's technically negative 12 degrees. But anyway, so just for that, you put a negative on this, and then, or you can put it in the parentheses, but don't forget to trap that exponent in parentheses. It would be 6 years times 12 compoundings per year, and close the parentheses, and there's your Uncle Bob. You need to put in $3,796.07. Now, if you want to have 5 grand in that account in 6 years. And again, just a reality check. Does that make sense? Well, it'll obviously be less than 5,000 because you're compounding. It's growing. And you're only 6 years in, so it's not going to be that much less. But anyway, there's that for you. Nothing really complicated about it. Just getting present values and future values. And from there, I mean, you can use the calculator if you want. I'm going to show you something here. I'm going to go back to this first, and I'm going to show you that you can actually, this is the most powerful function in the TI for finance people. You go apps, one, or just click enter. The one at the top is the TVM solver. Now, all of these others, these 2, 3, 4, 5, and 6, they are all in TVM Solver. All you have to do is put in enough information. If you put in everything you know and leave one thing blank, you can say alpha solve, and it'll tell you what that one is. Now, I'm going to take this one, and I'm going to do that first problem. So in this case, that first one was how much 100,000, so the number of periods would be 20 years, was that quarterly, times 4 periods per year. Drop down to your interest rate. The interest rate, now, I'm in an app, which means that I give it percentages, whole percentages, not decimals. Don't forget that. 3.8 divided by 4. Now, in that first one, I gave a present value of $100,000. And there were no more payments along the line. And see this P over Y and C over Y? Leave them alone. I mean, technically, you could fill these in, and then you wouldn't have to do the divided bys and the timeses. But it gets kind of confusing. I've found over the years, students get a little confused with which one you use, the P over Y or the C over Y. But anyway, now, see that future value? Oh, by the way, down here, keep this on end for straight lump sums. Just keep it on the end. Do not toggle it over to the beginning. Put it over on the end and leave the damn thing there. Now, I need to know the future value. So I put the cursor on future value and I say alpha solve. Well, spank me Buddha. There it is. The same answer I got before. You don't even have to do the arithmetic. Did you see that one? Okay, so now you say, well, that was pretty good, fat boy. Let's try the other one. N, for the we need to find a present value. Okay, so the number of periods here is 6 times 12. The percentage in this case was 4.6 divided by 12. Now, the present value, we don't know. Leave it alone. Don't delete it, or you'll get a pig face error message. Wait, we do know the present. No, do we know the present value? No, we don't know the present value. But I do know there's no payments along the way. Just at the end, I want $5,000. Now, typically, present values are entered as negatives, and they come out as negatives. It's just the way these calculators are. Don't ask. It's always been that way since the first one showed up in the late 1970s. But anyway, I'm on the PV. Again, don't delete this or it's going to get confused. Just say alpha solve. Well, there it is. Look at that. And it's so much faster. This is even faster than doing it in Excel, really. So you can find lump sums this way. One last thing before I go on. You see, when interest compounds more than once a year, we have something called the effective rate. It is the interest rate that would be as if you had annualized compounding. So in other words, you see that interest rate right there, that 4.6%? It's actually a little bit more than 4.6% because this is 4.6%, but compounding quarterly, or monthly in this case. So what would this be the same as an interest rate if it were an annual, an APR? Well, there's a formula for it. It's kind of a tedious formula. We call this the effective rate. Is nothing but 1 plus that periodic rate to the number of periods. That's all you do. Minus 1. Now, this is a benefit to investors, to savers. It is a detriment to borrowers because the effective rate will always be at least the size of the annual rate, the APR. In fact, when you take out a loan, they'll give you an APR. The APR on this car loan is 4.99%. But if you're paying monthly payments, it's actually the effective rate is more than 4.99%. By law, that has to be disclosed in the loan agreement, what you're actually paying. But I'll get to that more in a minute. But in this case, so for example, that 4.6%, the effective rate would be 1 plus 0.046 over, was that monthly? Yeah, that's monthly, 12 to the 12th power minus 1. Actually, I should put this as the number of compoundings per year. Just take it to the 12th power. So if I were to do that, and by the way, to get out of the app, second quit. Okay, let me do that. I would say 1 plus 0.046 divided by 12, close the parentheses, y to the x, 12, less 1, as a single stroke. It's 4.70%. Rounded to 2 decimal places. Be careful of rounding. Every company that you would work for has its own house rules about rounding. some round of 4 decimal places, round of 5, round of 6. Traditionally, I mean, old school percentages, we round to 2. But watch out what they ask for in your homework. Now, you're saying, well, that wasn't too bad, but I can make it even easier for you. I can go apps, finance, and I can go down here. If I go down far enough, really, effective. It's clear down there at C, effective rate. Now, let me make sure I can do this right here. 4.6 comma 4. I think you put in the interest rate first and then the, watch, oh, comma 12, I'm sorry, 12. Close the parenthesis. I think that's, yep, there it is. So if you use, so you don't even have to do that math. You can just go clear down, apps, finance, and then you go scroll way down, it's letter C, you can, and click on that, it'll bring you back up. It'll bring you up with the screen EFF and the open parenthesis, and then you key in the APR, the annual, and then you put a comma, and then the number of compoundings per year, and there's your Uncle Bob. You get your answer that fast. So a lot of this in our time is a lot easier than it used to be. When I taught this a low 40 years ago, it was just grueling. You use tables. Most people, there were a few calculators out there, but only the rich kids had those. For the rest of us, it was either on paper or using something called slide rules. Have you ever seen a slide rule? Oh, it was amazing. It was a giant kind of like ruler, but you move these things back and forth, and you could do very complex calculations by aligning the numbers the correct way. Just delightful. I still have mine because, by God, someday they'll come back when we have an electromagnetic pulse. People will be saying, where's that slide rule of yours? Anyway, that's enough of that one. A couple of mentions now. This was all about what are called lump sums. Taking an amount of money now and hauling it forward, or taking an amount of money in the future and hauling it backwards. Now, even if we have multiple amounts of money along the way, we can still do this to some extent. The formulas get to be a pain in the derry rear. And they, I think the book actually shows you the formulas, but then they switch right over and take you to Excel. I want you to, so you can see the Excel routines in the book. I like to show you these calculator routines because more than likely, if you need to do a calculation on the fly, it's going to be something where you need calculator to work with instead of an Excel spreadsheet. Now, a perpetuity, an annuity is a flow of money. It is more than one cash flow component. So I give you $100 in a year, I give you another $100 in 2 years, and I give you $200 in 3 years. That would be an annuity. Now, what's that worth now? That would be the present value of the annuity. If the annuity, let me show you this. Annuities we work with traditionally, in consumer finance at least, have a special characteristic. This is year 0, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. First things first. Let's say that it is $200 every year for 5 years. This would be called a level annuity. It's a level amount of money. Fortunately, like I said, in consumer finance, they are level. What gets to be a real pain in the butt is when they are unlevel. But fortunately, there's a trick you can do on the calculator, even if it's a non-level annuity. But anyway, now, that's the first thing. The second thing is that this, every payment occurs at the end of the period. So this is what would be called an ordinary annuity. That was that toggle there on that app, that finance app. Typically, with loan payments, they are ordinary annuities. You make your first payment 1 month after you take out the loan. If the payments occur at the beginning of each period, say like $300, every year, 5 years of $300, and then you carry forward to that. That's called an annuity due, D-U-E, an annuity due. The payments occur at the beginning of the period. You're thinking, well, when would that ever happen? Oh, it does. Think about this. You, sir. You made it. It was kind of a mistake, but you're really excited. You have just become a daddy. He disappears out the door. Yeah. Okay, so that birth, I'm exhausted after these. I've been at like three births in my life. No, four. And I mean, I'm tired after it's over. I mean, so you go out. It's like 2 a.m, you are so excited. I'm going to be a dad. My God, I got to stop smoking pot. And all that kind of stuff. And you say, well, by God, this kid is going to go to college. And there's not going to be any worry about tuition or one wishing or three wishing. That kid's going to have the money in the bank. So you drive to the bank and you're going to start put in money right away, $2,000. And you're going to do that for 18 times. So in other words, what will happen in that case is that here's year zero, here's year one, year two, and then we chop off, here's year 17, and here's year 18. You're going to put in $2,000 every year, starting right now, and then that's 18 payments. See, that's 18. And then that whole amount rides one last period, and on the kid's 18th birthday, you give that kid that money that's in there. So that last one carries forward one year. That is an annuity due, and they are actually very common in savings. Someone says, well, I want to get started right now, save enough money, et cetera, et cetera. Okay, so they do happen. Annuity due, don't get confused, and the formulas are just a pain in the butt, but we can do this so fast on the calculators these days. So in a case like this, okay, let's address this one. Okay, you're going to put $2,000 in the bank for 18 periods. Starting now, what will be the future value of this annuity due? Okay, let's give it an APR of, let's say, 4.9%. Now, about compoundings. The compoundings track the periodic payments. So if you're putting in the payments every year, the compoundings are annual. If you're putting in the payments every 6 months, they're semi-annual. So you don't really have to worry too much about that, except to make sure that you divide your annualized interest. So that's not going to be a much of a problem. So here we go. Okay, apps. Turn it on. God! It's the small things in life that really piss me off. Anyway, Apps Finance, this is your all-purpose time value of money solver. In this case, we have 18 periods. See them? 18. Now, the The APR on this is 4.9%. And remember that in the apps, you just put it in as the number, the whole number. Okay? And then now you crank on down here. Now, the present value, there is no initial kicker, as we could call it. There's just nothing in there right away. But you are starting out with $2,000 for payments, but those happen every year. You don't know the future value. Leave that thing alone. Go down here because this is a classic annuity due. The payments occur at the beginning. So toggle over and hit enter. Now bring it back up here, and I hope I don't get an error on this, for there's a possibility of an error. But alpha, take back up, put it on the future value. On that kid's 18th birthday, when you take that money out, you just say alpha solve, it will be $58,474.05. That will be enough for the kid to like you. So you'll be in business, okay? This is the beginning of financial planning. When people come to us, they tell us all of their different goals at different parts of their lives. Well, we got these three kids, ages 2, 5, and 7. We want to have enough for their college education, so we project how much college will cost at that time. Okay, we're going to set up a payment plan to get that tuition covered when they're ready for it, each one of them. We add up those payments every month. Okay, you want a house, a new house in 7 years. Okay, fine. We put that in. What kind of payments do we have to do to get that on there? We want a new car every 3 years. This is all just pure financial planning. This is what we do in that business, is just take up all their goals, get the payments for each one of these goals to be achieved at the time that they wanted to achieve it, and then we say, you write us a check for this total amount, and we'll see to it that you have the money for each of these goals when it comes due. That's financial planning. It's not all that complicated once you get the hang of it. And of course, we do it with Excel sheets, and then we do them really complicated, more complicated than we need to, just to blow our clients away so they'll be grateful and not ask us about our commissions. Okay, now, that's an annuity due. An ordinary annuity is the biggest thing that you do ordinary annuities for is loan payments. Now, this is where we come to a place where you tell me about yourself. I gotta find someone new. I am thinking your car. Madam. Now, let's not be ridiculous. If I said, what kind of a car do you want to buy? Don't say a BMW or a Porsche or a Ferrari. And for God's sake, if you say Tesla, I will change your grade. Okay. Give me a car that's, you know, a nice car. That's not going to be ridiculous, but it's something that you would like to have. You're consulting, really?
I don't know any car brands.
Really?
Toyota, yeah, let's go with that.
Wow. What? I don't know. A Toyota. Well, that's a make. You got a model in there? What? Camry? Okay, a Camry. Okay, let's say, okay, that's fine. A Camry is a very respectable car. It is something that a very responsible person would drive. I mean, okay, so let's say we want to get a 2020 Toyota Camry. Okay, well, now the manufacturer's suggested retail price is $24,425. That probably comes with a pretty standard package, so we'll just let that go, okay? And so, okay. Now, you go to your lender and you say, I want a 6-year loan. Now, those will be monthly payments. They say we can get you an APR of 3.59% So we would divide that by 12. Don't forget to divide your by the number of periods. And the present value, what I am going to borrow, would be the $24,000. Now, remember what I said. Present values, you always put them in as negatives, and they'll always come out as negatives. So don't forget to put in a negative, or you'll get a pig face error sign. And put in this negative, and we're going to put in 24,425, and then we're going to, let's get rid of this future value. There's going to be no kicker. Now, on leases, a lot of times with a lease, at the end of a three-year lease, they'll say, if you pay this much at the end of the lease, you can keep the car. But this is a normal loan, so the future value. Now, here's the other thing. Don't forget to put it back on the end. You're going to make your first payment 1 month after you take the car off the lot. Now, we go back up here, and we say, all right, get it back up to payment. Alpha, solve. $377.59 a month. That will be your payments on this car. You know it right up front what's going to happen. This is also, there's a twist on this, and I'll show you the twist that is really important to do. But right now, you've got, now you know how to calculate a loan payment. It's right there. Now let's do a twist on this. Suppose that you have set a limit based upon what you know about your lender and what percent of your disposable income they will let you have for as a payment. You know that you cannot have a payment of more than $325 a month. What would be the price of the car that would do that? Alpha, solve. It'd be $21,023. Here's why that's important. You can go to a dealer and you can say, okay, out the door, tax and title, car, I need you to find a way to get this car's price down to $21,023. Well, why that? Because that is the most that my lender will let me make a payment on is $325. That means that tax, title, everything out the door, I'm going to be able to borrow no more than $21,023. So that's what you need to make happen for me to buy this car from you. In other words, this gives you one of your most powerful negotiating tools. You're not whining and crying about, can you bring down the price? You have a number, and you can show them, here it is on the calculator, can you make this happen? If they say no, you just walk out the door. And you wait at home, they've got your phone number, and they'll call you the next day, as long as you're not unreasonable about it. That's one of the most powerful tools that you have in this arsenal of these things that we're doing here tonight. Is that you now know your payment threshold. Now, let's go back to that first home. You want to borrow. I'm not going to ask you anything else again, ever again, okay? Well, let's go with you, madam. What do you figure? You want to buy a house in a nice neighborhood. You know, a minimum of meth houses, the drive-by action is fairly mild. Kids go to schools where, active shooters are not that common. Too soon? Yeah. Okay. But the thing is, you want a decent home, a first home. Maybe in a nice neighborhood, certainly not Schaumburg, maybe Rockford. Joliet, yeah, there, Joliet, yeah. The nicer side of Joliet. There's a White Castle, really, really good one. No, seriously, every time I go to Chicago, I stop at that White Castle, 30, and extra cheese, onions, extra pickles. Okay, now, what do you figure it's going to cost you? $135. Now, we can say, okay, let's say that right now, interest rates, right now, actually, about 4.29%. You can actually haul through on a 30-year fixed-rate mortgage for 30 years, 12 payments a year, at 4.29% divided by 12, with a present value of negative, if you're getting a 100% loan, of negative $135,000. All you have to do now is go down to payment and say alpha solve. Your payments will be $667 a month on this home. Now you know what you're facing for your dream home in Joliet, just down the street from the White Castle. And I'll make sure that they take care of you. I know the people in there. That's all I have for you tonight. I thank you.